Well, thank you, Christine. Well, good morning, good afternoon, and good evening to all, and welcome to the Review of All Rights Protection Mechanisms in All GTLDs PDP Working Group call on the 30th of August, 2017, 31st of August of 2017. In the interest of time today, there will be no roll call as we have quite a few participants online. Attendance will be taken via the Adobe Connect room, so if you're only on the audio bridge, would you please let yourself be known now? All right, thank you. Hearing no name, I would like to remind all participants to please state your name before speaking for transcription purposes, and please keep your phones and microphones on mute when not speaking to avoid any background noise. With this, I'll hand the meeting back over to Kathy Kleinman.
Terrific. Thank you very much. Let me echo good evening, good morning, good afternoon to everyone attending, including Asia and Australia, hopefully tonight. This is Kathy Kleinman. I'm one of the co-chairs, and I'm joined tonight by both of the other two co-chairs of the working group, J. Scott Evans and Phil Corwin. Let me start with the first item always on our agenda, whether there are any updates to statements of interest. I'll pause for a second. Okay, seeing none, let me go ahead and introduce the agenda item for tonight. First, thank you for joining us for tonight. This is the monthly call that we do arrange for Asia and Australia, and it's wonderful to see 29 participants on it. It's important to have these calls because it's important that at least some of our meetings can be attended by all of our members. It's also important to hear from all of our members. And tonight, the three co-chairs have invited one of our members, Lori Schulman, to present an overview of the International Trademark Association's report titled INTA, New GTLD Cost Impact Survey. And this was published in April of 2017. It's a 75-page survey and report, 60 pages of main report and 15 pages of appendices. And I, for one, am very happy and thank Lori Schulman for being here to present it and to summarize it for us and to share with us this important information. Lori, in addition to being one of our members, is the International Trademark Association's Senior Director of Internet Policy, and of course she was the co-chair of one of our sub-teams. So again, Lori has taken the time to create a summary of the report in PowerPoint for us, which is which you can see up on the screen now. And the plan is for her to present the entire summary, and then we'll be circulating, and then we'll be discussing it. We'll also be circulating these slides to the working group and continuing the discussion online. So barring any objections or questions, Lori, would you like to go ahead?
Thank you, Kathy. And this is Lori Schulman for the transcript. Thank everybody, at least on the East Coast and others, for dialing in late or early, depending on where you are. But I want to preface this report by saying that this study was commissioned and intended for use as a cost impact analysis rather than an impact of effectiveness of the RPMs. I think it's very important to understand the purpose of the report as I go through the report. I'm essentially giving you the same high-level overview that I gave the CCTRT a few months ago, but where I've been able to, I have added some slides to make it a little more relevant to RPMs. So it looks a little different than what was posted to the list a few weeks ago. Along with this slide presentation in its earlier form, I believe I also posted a compilation of the anecdotal evidence based on the RPM it applied to, whether it was URS, Sunrise, Claims, or TNCH. So all of that should already be on our wiki page, and if anything is missing, I'll be happy to supply it to the group as soon as the call is over. What I'd like to do now is go through the slides with high-level messaging that INTA put together. This is an INTA report, to explain and at least talk about some of the concerns that have already been raised on the list in terms of response rates and applicability of the data to what our RPM group is tasked with. So I will spend a good deal of time on methodology and explaining where we felt we could improve in the future, but we feel it could be helpful now to both the CCTRT and the RPM groups. So just a snapshot of who answered our survey. Our survey opened in January 9th specifically, and closed in February. The data about the open-close date and who responded is in the slides on report slide number 3. The survey was sent to 1,096 interregular members, and an interregular members, in shorthand, is a brand owner. This could be large corporates, small and emerging businesses, or nonprofits. It was noted on the list that INTA has over 7,000 members. The other 6,000 members did not receive this survey because they are considered service providers and not brand owners. These would be the law firms, associates, trademark search services, domain registrars and registries. It could be anybody who's providing services to a trademark owner. So a decision was made in order to keep the data relevant to brand owners specifically, to only survey brand owners, because otherwise there was a risk of the service providers answering questions in the aggregate or with aggregated information that could in fact be counted doubly. You know, for example, if something was sent to Adobe and Adobe filled out the survey, but then an Adobe service provider then also filled out the survey, then in fact Adobe's answers could potentially be counted twice, even if that was not the intention. So that is why we stuck to only the members we identify as strictly brand owners. Now, of course, some service providers can be a brand owner. I think Donuts is a good example where they provide a service and they're a brand in our industry. And so those, for the benefit of doubt, if you provide a service and you're a big brand, you are still considered a service provider for the purposes of the study. In terms of whether or not the study is randomized, to the extent that it was randomized to the general public, it was not. It was, though, randomly sent to all regular members. We didn't carve out specific groups of regular members. If you qualify as a regular member, you got the survey. The questions that were asked on the study were based on significant input from the CCTRT, as well as a worksheet that we put together to try to prepare the respondents for doing the survey, as it was very labor intensive, very data intensive. However, to again clarify, INTA was approached by ICANN to conduct this study about 2 years ago, and it took about a year to put it together, and then of course we administered it last January. We had overall from the 1,096, 33 responses. 32 of the responses were for for-profits, one from a nonprofit. The data has been analyzed and reported with a copy forwarded to the CCTRT and now to the RPM review PDP. There is a note inside the study that I think is relevant to some of the conversations that were available on the list today and prior days regarding how to read this report. And I am going to read through this to clarify that INTA understands that the response rate does present challenges in terms of the validity of the report, that an analysis of subsamples of less than 30 are subject to high variability. Therefore, Nielsen cautioned when interpreting the items. This is noted on the relevant slide from Nielsen. So Nielsen is identifying where they feel that the data, because of the low response rate, may not be as reliable, and we need to take it with a grain of salt. Again, additionally, with a small sample size, percentages don't always exactly add up to 100%. And lastly, there were some members who reported that they were engaged in certain activities that listed the cost as $1. So this could indicate that the cost was zero and there was no room for zero in the survey, or that the cost could not be captured or were contained in some other cost they entered. We do not know the actual intent, but the $1 responses do not have a material effect on the averages shown. If anything, they would suggest that the cost may be understated. This is a direct copy of a slide from the report. It's study slide 5. So INTA is mindful that there are flaws in the study, and we don't present this as definitive, but we present it as information. This is information that we obtained from our members that is in a report form that we are happy to submit to any ICANN working group that asks for it. How the working group decides to use the data or what weight to give the data, that will be at the discretion of the group. INTA has clearly no say in the matter, except to the extent that we are active participants in many of the working groups, and you know, we'll raise our opinions and vote accordingly. So it looks like I have double slide. Oh, it looks like I'm going backwards. Sorry. Okay, so there were challenges with completion that I mentioned. 93 participants entered the survey. 33 completed it. 48 were suspended it. 9 did not qualify. And 3 were in the survey when it closed and were unable to complete. We were strict on the time due to the extension that we had already been given. We had originally given our members about 3 to 4 weeks, I think it was 4 weeks, to answer the survey. But given the complexities and the time involved, we were asked for extensions and we granted them. But once we granted the extensions, then the final close date was absolute. These are some of the challenges we heard from members regarding why it was difficult to complete the survey, that it was too long and time-consuming. Even though the actual clock time to complete the survey was 45 minutes to an hour, the prep time itself could be 5 to 10 hours, depending how individual members collected data. Some staff of our members were given strict time allocations for their responses. So, for example, someone's boss would say, well, you have 3 hours to do this, and it takes 3 hours, don't answer it. We heard that numbers are not kept this way, that the data that we were asking for that we thought would be helpful to the CCRT review was not actually kept in forms that could be easily ascertained. We were also told that the information is too confidential to share, even with a third-party provider. The reason that INTA decided to use the third-party provider was to actually build this wall of confidentiality so that our members would feel comfortable providing answers, knowing that INTA would not know who answered and that we couldn't identify specific respondents. We also learned that the information that was being looked for was frequently dispersed throughout the company. There wasn't one holder of information, and trying to coordinate something between IT and legal and accounting, it was not necessarily a reasonable request to some. Also, we found a flaw late in the project that the worksheet did not correspond to all of the questions that required data. In response to this point, INTA plans to update the worksheet and provide it as a tool for its members. This should help in follow-up studies as we do plan follow-up studies. There was at least 2 beta tests of this survey, and this worksheet flaw, unfortunately, wasn't captured until the survey went live. Here is a slide directly from the report which discussed the geographic distribution of the 33 members who participated. And as you can see, Europe, North America, Latin America, all regions are represented, although some are very more represented than others. And they are the regions you would suspect, the North American regions of Canada and the U.S. INTA membership is divided, as I explained, between what we call brand owners and regular members, and then associate members and service providers, academics, students. We have individuals. We have differing categories of membership. And as I said, we stuck to our brand owners. And what we find among the brand owners, almost 70% of them do come from Canada and the U.S. So the actual response rate does track to our own membership. We do work hard and are working hard, just like ICANN, to encourage participation from corporate members from Asia, Latin America, and Africa. But the numbers there aren't there yet, but we hope they will be there in the future. So how do we make meaning of this data, given the fact that we had a low response rate, that most of the respondents seem to come from North America? So what use of this is this at all to the community? So we have a response to this. Given the response rate, we would say that the results are an indicator of a trend and not the trend itself. The results are not dispositive, but they could indicate where things are going. This is a new endeavor for INTA, and given that the survey was an onerous one in terms of data extraction, in fact, we are pleased with the participation of our members. I will note that it took a lot of effort from a lot of people to get the answers that were given. Hundreds of hours were put into data collection, to recruiting members, asking questions, and really getting as much participation as we possibly could. We aim to continue to review the GTLD issues more thoroughly, and the starting point is the refinement of the survey worksheet as a tool for data collection that reflects real-world practice and satisfies the need for information as outlined by the CCTRT. As I said, we were asked for specific data points. We did our best to collect them, but we found what may be accurate or appropriate in ICANN world may not transcend to the business world, and we need to figure out how to bridge that gap so we get the data that we need. So this is how the report breaks down. For those of you who haven't read it yet, this is just a little guide sheet. It starts with background information, much of it which I've already explained, notes on how to read the report, members who participated, what the key findings are in summary, what the actual domain name activity is for purchasing domain names using RPMs, enforcement costs, behaviors, policy, and perceptions, what our members actually did, summaries and thoughts, verbatim comments, and it's the verbatim comments that I think may be most helpful to this group, as this is the anecdotal evidence that goes to the URS, Sunrise, TNCH claims, all of the RPMs, and whether or not the members who responded felt that these were useful tools for them, and whether or not they struck the right balance between fairness to all and balancing trademark rights. We also have an actual copy of the survey and the worksheets for everyone's review as well. So these are the high-level conclusions that we came to based on the data that we had, that registrations of new TDLDs are overwhelmingly defensive. Registrations of new TDLDs were overwhelmingly made for defensive purposes to prevent someone else from registering. As such, few of the respondents felt, it was 10%, that there were alternative domains to consider, whether registering a new legacy or CCTLD. This conclusion can be found on study slide 9. Trademark defense costs have increased. The new GTLD program has increased the overall cost of trademark defense with internet monitoring and diversion actions as the largest line items. Average cost for all TLDs for 2 years was $228,000. For new TLDs for 2 years, $40,528. You can find this data on study slide 27. New GTLDs are parked. I think we've discussed this a bit in some of our sub-team calls, but the data we have from S33 respondents verify that domain names registered by brand owners and new GTLDs are commonly parked and not creating value other than preventing unauthorized use by others. And that may in and of itself be a value. This is something for this group to determine, and you can find this data on study slide 9. But an interesting data point here is that the company size does not necessarily correlate to company spend. The brand activity appears to be the driving factor. So brand activity could refer to a number of things, the number of trademarks you own, how much you're marketing around them, how many products you're offering under them. And we found that two similar sized companies could still vary in their costs based on the number of brands and the nature of their brand strategy. And this is on study slide 56. This is a new slide. Actually, I'm not even sure the CCTRT has seen it, but I thought it would be valuable to this group. We have a slide that is broken down in two areas in the study. I forget the original slide numbers, but they're pretty easy to find given the graphics that talk about breakdown and costs. And what we asked Nielsen to do was to be a little more specific with one of the breakdowns when it came to claims. You know, what percentage of the cost, the average two-year cost, were actually related to claims? And Nielsen was able to break that down for us in at 4% of the cost. And you can see that in this diagram. Other costs are broken down as well, monitoring and diversion, actions that were taken, enforcement actions versus owners versus registrars versus registries. I will say that trademark-related costs, what those mean is basically the cost of registering and maintaining a trademark registration. All other costs like demand, letters, monitoring, they're included in other portions of the chart. Generally, our members thought that RPMs are helpful. Two-thirds of the respondents surveyed feel that UDRPs and required sunrise periods have helped mitigate risks to a major and moderate extent. Of those who think that RPMs are helpful, they're ranked as follows: UDRP at 67%, Sunrise at 64%, claims at 36%, URS at 27%, and the PDTLP, the RRDRP, and the PICDRP at 15%. These are found on study slide 15 and 51, respectively. We also learned that the TMCH registrations are used by a majority of respondents. 9 out of 10, in fact, registered at least one trademark in the TMCH, with 6 in 10 registering between 1 and 10. Costs run the gamut, ranging anywhere from $1 to $48,000. As I said, this $1 is a bit of a conundrum into how to report it, because it could be a zero. We don't know. But the $1 is what Nielsen used to identify the lower end of activity. I'm going to respond to something that George said in the chat. Okay, there is an assumption here in all of this report, whether it says members or our members that responded. Of course, this is about the members who responded. We have already stated and acknowledged the low turnout rate. If we're going to get that, I don't know what word to use, atomic or nuclear about, you know, molecular, about that kind of wording, I'm happy to go back and change every single of who responded. It's clear that this report is about of who responded. Some Sunrise period takeaways that we found on study slides 51 and 11, that 64% of the respondents feel that Sunrise periods have helped mitigate risks, which I mentioned before. The breakdown comes down to 18% thinks it's a major help, 45% a moderate. 90% of the respondents who registered new TLDs registered during a Sunrise period, which we also think is interesting. Regarding premium pricing, this is on study slide 48. 3/4 of the respondents evaluate premium pricing for domain names on a case-by-case basis. 2/3 of their domain registration decisions have been affected by premium pricing, with .sex being mentioned the most as a TLD that they did pay premium pricing for. 15% of respondents refused to pay premium pricing at all, so it's across the board. What we did learn from those who responded is that defense, not choice, is driving purchases. While the goal of the new DTLD program is to increase choice for brand owners, choice does not seem to be the prime consideration. The new DTLD program does appear to have increased the overall cost of trademark defense. Cost has impacted small companies and big companies alike, with the most relevant cost driver factor being the number of brands as opposed to the size of the company. So the status within the CCTRT with this report is that the full report has been presented to the CCTRT. The CCTRT is reviewing and may post this report for further comment. There was a follow-up meeting held with Nielsen with questions from the CCRT to clarify how costs were calculated. INSA is offering this also to the RPM group. If you have specific questions, I am happy to take all of those questions in writing and set up a meeting with Nielsen. The way we worked it with the CCTRT is we had one representative and myself speak with Nielsen. We would propose to do the same thing with RPM. We are also, INTA intends to develop a tool for continuous tracking of costs. As I explained, what we asked didn't necessarily reflect accounting measures in the real world, and this was a big learning curve for us, and I think the CCTRT as well. As we develop this tool, if there are questions that we feel might be effective for ascertaining effectiveness of RPMs, we certainly could consider adding them to the tool as well. There are points for the RPM review to consider, and I felt it was important to repeat them here. That the purpose of the study is to assess cost, not effectiveness of RPMs. That the CCTRT evaluation criteria are different from RPM evaluation criteria, but there could be overlaps. Given the limited scope and purpose of the data, which parts of the analysis are useful for RPM review? And if it is determined that the report may be useful, then perhaps, and this is my personal suggestion, then perhaps the subteams can evaluate based on the relevant slides given the size of the report, rather than have the entire group break down the report. You could do it either way, but I will say that some technical questions about why a particular response was worded a particular way or why a graph looks the way it does, I will have to go back and consult with the survey designers. I know Paul Keating had asked a question today about why one column on slide 22 is worded one way but not another way. I think it's a good question, and I will ask it. So I'm asking if you have those kinds of questions, to kindly put them in writing, to forward them to Mary, to put them on the list. We will aggregate everything, and every question will be asked. And I thank everybody for their time and attention.
Lori, this is Kathy. Thank you so much for that presentation. It's important for us to see the overview. Thank you for walking us through it, and for us to understand that the International Trademark Association was trying to be very responsive to the competition, consumer trust, and consumer choice review team, and that to the extent that the information in the survey, in the study, in the responses, and as you said, in some of the candid comments that were made, are useful to us, then we should embrace it and use that information. I think that makes sense. As chair, let me take the prerogative, if I might, to ask the first question, which has to do with the study slides. When it mm-hmm. says study slide 51, 11, 48, sorry if I missed it, but what are you referring to, and where would we find
okay,
that?
Okay, these are the direct references to the report. The report was posted to the RPM Wiki, I believe, a week ago. I'm not sure of the exact timing because I was actually away, as many of you know, but I did, before I left, ask the staff to post the report, to post into my presentation that I gave to the CCTRT, and a breakdown of the anecdotes on the end of the report that by subject matter, to make it easier for the team to read. So when I refer to a slide, I'm referring back to the source document. Now, some of our members have already read this document in full and have asked very technical questions, and in fact have questioned the validity of the report. You know, and my position here is, this is the report we did, this is the information we have. It is up to the various working groups to decide how, if any, weight they're to give this information. But this is what we have, and we were happy to do it. And we were happy to do a follow-up based on our learnings, probably within the next 2 years.
Terrific. Thank you, Lori. So a study slide 29 would then take us to the full report, page 29, the data about the respondents who registered in the Trademark Clearinghouse.
Correct. So
that makes perfect sense. Okay, let me open it up to other questions. If I might, Lori, are you receptive to getting questions?
To the extent that I can honestly answer the questions, I'm receptive, although if we're asking technical questions, as I said, I'm going to reserve the right to defer them until all the questions are put in one packet so that we can give it an honest and thorough look through. I know George has the first question. I'm going to anticipate part of the question, if he asks me, is into going to withdraw the report, and we are not. So I'm happy to take George's first question.
Okay. Thank you, Lori. And George, go ahead, please.
George Gricos for the transcript. Thanks, Lori. You seem to acknowledge that there is going to be a follow-up meeting with Nielsen. Is that correct?
There may be, depending on if this work group requests it.
Because that would be valuable.
Depending on Nielsen's receptivity. We've had it with the CCTRT. There was a representative, once they got all their questions together, copies of the questions were forwarded to Nielsen, and then we had a discussion for clarification purposes. If you have questions like that, I am perfectly happy to do that for this group as well.
Right, because I'm not sure what your academic background is, whether you study statistics. I'm presuming probably not, so they'd probably be in the best position to answer some of these questions. But basically, obviously, my main question is, you seem to acknowledge that it's a self-selected, non-random, and unrepresentative sample, and also it's far too small in order to make any statistically reliable conclusions about the larger population it purports to represent. And so if that's correct, do you then acknowledge that it should just be treated as a series of anecdotes as opposed to saying anything at all about the larger population, i.e. either the group of 1,000 members of INTA and or all trademark holders? Thank you.
Yeah, George, I think this is a decision for the RPM group to make. That's what I'm saying. This is the information. This is presented with all its flaws and with the benefits it may or may not have, and it's really up to the group to decide that. I do believe that the question was, quite frankly, a little loaded in terms of what my background is. I think that's irrelevant at this point. I think that if you're saying, did we survey the general population? No. But there was an agreement made that because of the size of INTA and who we represent, INTA would be the logical place to go. ICANN has done, I believe, similar studies trying to get similar information and hasn't gotten very much larger response rates either. What we're asking people to do is give up a lot of proprietary information. And we're also asking them questions in a way where they don't generally keep these types of records. I mean, every department acts differently. As I said, some of this information could be in legal, some of it could be in IT, some of it could be in accounting, some of it could be in marketing. So we really asked our members to do a heavy lift to get this level of detail. And the fact that 96 entered, you know, showed the interest, but the fact that we could only get 33 to convert to full and final answers, yes, means we have to learn from this and do better. But whether or not we should scrap all that information is not helpful, I don't agree with that supposition. But again, I think that's up for the group to decide.
Hi, Lori. This is Kathy, and I think there's general consensus that that's up to the group to decide, and so that's a very fair statement. And sharing so candidly what you gathered, what you created, what the limitations were, but also what the advantages are, is a very fair presentation as well. I see a question from Phil Corwin, and I'm not promising to read all the questions in the chat room because I'm sure I won't see all of them. But, Lori, this is from Phil, and it says, I don't see anything in these slides regarding use of private RPMs such as DPML and whether that affected use of Sunrise. Were any questions asked about that?
No, there were no specific questions on private RPMs. We really stuck to what is being offered through the requirements of ICANN and the contracted parties as opposed to the private. I mean, there's some anecdotal evidence there that mentions certain parties and their DPMLs, but we didn't ask any specific questions to that.
Terrific. Thank you. And Mary, I'm going to, or Lori, if you could see the full names. For some reason, I'm only seeing abbreviated names of people who have raised their hand.
Sure. I see Michael R. Mike Blumenbaugh has his hand up.
Perfect.
I only see one hand at the moment, so I'm happy to call on Mike.
Yeah, that's Michael Graham. Can you hear me?
Oh, Michael Graham. Yes. Hi, Michael.
Yeah.
I thought it was Rodenbaugh. Yeah, I guess apparently I'm seeing partial names, too.
No, I just Lori, I wanted to thank you for that presentation. Only Lori knows, but during most of that presentation, I was busy harvesting in my garden, so it was quite entertaining. But I did want to address a couple things just so that it is clear, and Lori already brought this up, and just so that it is understood. The cost impact study was really something that was generated in response to a request from the CCT review team for specific metrics that were developed back in 2012, 2013, that they felt would be important in their review of the status of the new GTLD program. And those specific questions were ones that were included in the survey. Many of them, unfortunately, are either phrased in a way, because that is how the information they were seeking, phrased in a way that were difficult to answer for businesses, or sought information that businesses and intellectual property attorneys and teams do not keep in the regular course of business. It's similar to the type of problem I think that we face in talking with registries, registrars, and individuals. Because the information that we discover in our analysis of the RPMs that would be important for us are not things that they were considering as they were going through the process. So that was part of the issue, both in terms of the nature of the questions, and they were specific to the CCTRT questions and not to any other questions from any of the other review teams. Accidentally, We did collect some information that I think is useful to a number of them, both RPM's subsequent review team and the WHOIS review teams as well. But that's almost accidental. The other thing, by way of explanation, is the questions were so were designed in a if only we could collect this information format rather than what can realistically be gained from the people who will be responding. And that's one reason why I think the exercise that we went through the Sunrise and the claims subgroups in considering whether or not information that we thought would be important is information that we could gather was very good. And then a final point, because of the nature of the questions, because of the complexity and the scope of information being requested, and because the design of the survey was such, and this was from the survey designers who were hired as professionals to put this together, the design was such that respondents could not not answer any questions and could not provide anecdotal information where statistical information was being asked for. So of those 93, a number of them were people who wanted to provide the information and simply weren't able to because of the design of the survey. And that's something, as Lori referred to, is something that we're looking at for future reviews and surveys for INTA and for other trademark owners and domain name owners. So I just wanted to speak up just to give that clarification. I hope that helps make it a bit clearer. It's something that Lori said, yes, it was 2 years to get, and I lived through those two years from the time they were developed with the metrics team originally through the CCT and then finally through these results. So, Lori, thanks a lot. I think INTA did a lot to get this out there. We all wish that we had more respondents, but in response to that question, no. Being a professional in the field, I think they are indicative of the experience of trademark owners in this space.
Thank you. I want to address something in the chat since we don't have any hands up at the moment. Louise Harrell asked whether or not we could get a list of countries. Given the small amount of respondents, I don't know if a list of countries would actually be considered some sort of breach of confidentiality. I don't see why, but I am certainly willing to ask and provide that list. I have no problem with that at all, and I just want to make sure it's within the bounds of what we can ask for, given that we do have this this confidentiality agreement in place. Thank you.
And Lori, this is Kathy. I just wanted to add to what you and Michael said that, and I appreciate Michael providing us the background, because I heard a constant refrain from the CCTRT members that there was a lot of data they were looking for that they were having trouble finding. So I think in a lot of ways, this whole process is setting the benchmark for the future, and that there's a lot of data we don't have, a lot of ways we haven't had of collecting it, asking people to keep it, asking them to track it, people, companies, organizations. And in the future, that will change, and you're part of that change and part of that new process. Thank you. Who is, Lori, can you see who's next in the queue? Paul?
Yes, Paul McGrady is raising his hand.
Thank you.
Paul, yes.
Thanks, Kathy. This is Paul McGrady for the record. I know there's been a lot of back and forth on the chat and on the list about this or that perceived flaw in this survey, but what I think the important part to capture, the overarching theme here, is that new GTLDs are not cost-free for brand owners. I don't think that even those claiming that this particular survey doesn't meet their standards for surveys would say that new GTLDs have resulted in a payment to brand owners due to their existence. I think that there's hopefully consensus around the idea that this does, in fact, cost brand owners money. And what we're talking about is whether or not this particular survey provides any useful information about, how much money, I suppose, on average, if you average this out over the entire INTA membership, which this doesn't, claim to do. But there certainly is information here about how much it has cost particular brand owners And I think that that's an important thing to know. And, of course, none of this is a surprise. Even when ICANN did its economic study in advance of round one, those guys who did that survey, you know, they have an entire section on upcoming defensive registration costs and other costs to consumers based upon enhanced confusion. And so I understand the reasons for objecting to, you know, this or that technical issue related to this survey, you know, which is, you know, reasons that are based upon advancing a position that is maybe viewed as inconsistent with some of the conclusions in the survey. The reality of it is that what we're talking about is not whether or not new GTLDs have cost brand owners extra money, time, and hassle, but just how much. And as we can see from some of these survey results, they're not insignificant. Thank you.
Thanks. This is Lori. May I chime in, too?
Please do.
If you look at the note even from Nielsen, it says results under 30 are to be cautioned. We had 33. So it's still close to 30, but it is above 30. It's 33. It's 10% more than what Nielsen cautioned is being careful about reading. So I do think there is enough to give some weight to this. I do think that George Kirikos makes this a point about the low response rate, but I don't think that given what we're tasked to do, which is effectiveness of RPMs, which is going to be an accumulation of hard and soft data, that we consider this soft data. I don't, you know, I'm not insulted by saying it's not hard data. We didn't have 1,000 people responding. Well, we were never going to have 1,000 people respond. I was hoping for over 50. That was my personal hope. And, you know, the fact that we got 93 in, I considered it a success from a sort of advocacy and marketing perspective, but the fact that it couldn't be finished is what I think is concerning in terms of figuring out how to do this and get better results for the future.
That makes perfect sense, Lori. This is Kathy. And having you as a member of the working group, having you presenting, having you sharing kind of very candidly information about the survey, how it came into existence, the questions you were asked by the CCTRT, the issues that they're wrestling with is all very valuable. Very valuable insight to kind of understanding the structure, the data, the information being presented in the survey and reports.
Thank you. And I want to just remind people, costs are hard. Costs are measurable. I think effectiveness is much more difficult, and that is what this group is tasked with.
Costs and effectiveness. Good point. It is definitely getting late for some of us in North America, but let me see if there are others who want to take some of the discussion going on in the chat room and bring it onto the telephones. Okay. Barring that, let me ask Mary, Michelle, or Amr if they can tell us when the next meeting is. We're not cutting off discussion yet, just moving on to the next item briefly on the agenda as people are thinking about other things they want to talk about regarding the study. Can you tell us when the next meeting is, please?
Hi, Kathy. This is Mary from staff, and as you recall, we're doing a rotation where we have three meetings at 1700 UTC on Wednesdays, with the fourth meeting at 0300 UTC on Thursdays. So today's is the fourth meeting, which means that next week we go back to the other rotation of Wednesdays at 1700 UTC.
Fantastic. Thank you. So then we'll have 3 weeks at the regular rotation, and we'll return to our Asia and Australia meeting. Again, back to the report survey. Any further issues to raise, questions, thoughts?
Kathy, this is Lori.
Sure.
I noticed that Michael Fleming asked in the chat room, the average total defense cost per company on slide 13, he thinks, is that inclusive of individual workers' salaries or only the cost of defensive action? I can look into that. If I recall, there was some worker time factored into this. I'm not sure how, but that is something I can go back and look at our notes because we probably do have them in our notes, or I can certainly ask Nielsen. And what I've asked Mary and Amr to do is take all of the questions that are in the chat and to put them into one document that I can easily pass along. And as I said, we've had many discussions, and it's possible that some of these questions have been asked, and that given the time of night, my recall is not as sharp as it should be. And I'd be happy to look in our notes to see if we have the answers already. If not, I will reach out and I will ask.
Great. And it looks like George has followed up, if I'm reading this correctly, and asking whether the $150,000 costs apply to all trademark holders. So there's kind of a question of who it applies to and how far. So we'll add that.
That was an average, I believe. An average. So
okay,
some are going to spend more and some are going to spend less.
But it's an average of the participants, which included some very large companies, I think.
Yes, exactly. Right.
Okay.
So 33 had some very large companies and some small ones and one nonprofit.
Okay, so some of the large companies in particular may have been spending an awful lot on defensive processes.
Correct. I would say it would depend. As we said, size didn't necessarily correlate to spend. It could easily correlate to the fame of a mark rather than the size of a company as well.
It could easily correlate to the...
The fame of a mark.
The fame of a mark. Sorry, I
missed the word. Smaller companies spending more money because they have a more famous mark than a larger
right.
company who might not have as strong a brand. Like size,
yeah.
Size and activity didn't necessarily correlate. I just want to remind the group of that.
And you have that in the slides as well. That's an interesting point.
Yeah, that was something I thought was very interesting too. And I also noticed that Michael Graham has his hand up.
Terrific. Michael, go ahead, please.
Yeah, I was just to jump in and help Lori answer that last question so it doesn't have to go too far. Salaries for in-house, well, there were two salary components in determining the costs. One, of course, would have been the hourly rates charged by outside counsel for work, which was generally fairly easy to get. The other cost would have been in-house. Again, some in-house departments were able to break that out because they do divide up their billing and their work based on the tasks, and so those were able to provide direct costs. Companies like my own, where we do not keep records in that way, it was based on the estimate of time spent on defensive work with domain names, according to how the question is phrased. I'm not looking at it, so I don't want to say exactly what the measure was. But answering that question based on the percentage of time each of the employees spent on that and taking from that their salary. That doesn't take into account other benefits, so that there is, to a certain extent, a low-ball cost on the corporate side. But that's how that information was determined, and it was, in fact, included. The $150,000, I believe, was an estimate. I don't think it was the mean, but I'd have to look at the slides, and I'd refer anyone back to the slides. The summary is exactly what Lori said. It's sort of a summary of findings and talking points. For the exact information, go back to the summary, to the survey questions, and then also, to the extent possible, if we have enough and the right types of questions, and Nielsen's able and willing to do it, we can put together a group of questions for them. And they've been very helpful in answering questions to clarify what they've done and what it means. Thanks.
Michael, wait, this is Kathy. Can I ask a question? What is the relationship, and again, sorry if I missed it late at night, the relationship between Nielsen and the International Trademark Association on this? Why are we asking Nielsen the questions?
Nielsen was the company. This is Michael Graham for the record. Nielsen was the company that was hired by Nielsen to provide together the survey, to conduct it, and to analyze it. And it was based on a RFP that was sent out with a number of respondents. Nielsen also, by way of history, provided at least two, I believe, other surveys for the CCTRT, so that when they were awarded the RFP, it was thought to be very good because they had already been in discussions with the CCTRT, knew what they were looking for, knew how to ask the questions, some of which was true, some of which we unfortunately learned was not necessarily true in putting together this survey. But there was no relationship other than hiring them to conduct the survey, the study.
I want to clarify.
Thank you. This
is Lori for the record. May I clarify the answer?
Sure.
To the degree that Nielsen, as the third-party provider, is under an NDA with INTA, we don't have direct access to any of the results. They are proprietary to Nielsen, and I think that's important to remember. We did not conduct the survey. We hired someone to do it for us. As I explained earlier, we wanted to build a wall, so to speak, so that our members would feel comfortable providing information that is normally considered proprietary. So it's very important to us to not have any access to the answers. So the report we have is the report we have. We don't have any more information.
Terrific, Lori. Thank you. Mary, is there any way that we can cancel out? Thank you.
Yeah.
Great.
Cynthia King has her hand up, Kathy.
Yes.
I'm sorry,
absolutely.
I know you can't see.
Cynthia, please go ahead.
Hi, can you hear me?
Yes, we can, very well.
Okay, thank you. This is Cynthia King. I realize that it's 11 o'clock at night where I am, meaning that it's midnight where a lot of these folks are on the East Coast. And I'm reading the comments in the section, and I saw the emails that came through today, read all of those. And I'm having a hard time understanding why we're having so much discussion about how much weight to give this report. It's a good report, and it gives us useful information. From that useful information, each one of us will have to decide exactly how much weight to give it. So I'm kind of confused why there's so much going on. In a perfect world with unlimited time and unlimited money, we could go out and interview all of the big 1,000 brand owners and get their information over time. But we don't have unlimited time, and we don't have unlimited money, and what we have is what we have. So unless we're talking about going out and trying to obtain more results from the intergroup or other large brand owners, then we need to take the information that we have and, you know, internalize that and use it for the purpose, which is to give us some insight. So the idea of deciding exactly how much weight to give this study seems kind of a waste of time, right? Deciding whether it gets 50-50 weight or 40% weight or whatever. I think that we would all be better served if we internalized these results, decided that, you know, we think that the results may be imperfect, but move forward. And that's just my opinion. Thank you.
Thank you for sharing your opinion. Thank you to everyone for sharing their opinions on this. It's a number of questions have been raised, a number of questions have been answered, and but Cynthia, what you say is very fair as well. So let me see if anyone else has anything to discuss. Otherwise, it is almost the 1 hour mark, and we will close this discussion and continue it online. The slides, as has been discussed earlier, Lori tweaked these specifically for our working group. So this new slide deck will be circulated, with Lori's permission, will be circulated to the working group, so everyone will have a chance to review it, as well as to review the chat from tonight, and if they'd like to, the recording, and we will continue the discussion. But hopefully tomorrow. I don't know about others. I'm not answering any emails tonight. So let me wish everyone a good night, a good morning, a good afternoon, and look forward to talking with everyone next week. For those celebrating Labor Day in North America, have a good holiday. Thanks very much.
Kathy.
Take care. And special thanks to Lori for spending so much time in preparation for tonight and in preparation of this data. Thank you, Lori. Thanks for sharing
it
with
us. Thank you, Kathy.
Good night.
Good night.
Thank you. Today's meeting has been adjourned. Operator, please stop the recordings and disconnect all remaining lines.